Welcome to Mormon Happy Hour. My name is Colleen Dietz. Join me and my guests each week for an entertaining recap of the hottest topics in Mormonism. We keep tabs on social media and headline news so you don't have to. Don't miss our live pro tips as you adjust to your new and exciting post-Mormon life. Mormon Happy Hour is here to bring you the irreverent side of Mormonism, wherever you may be. Welcome to episode 68. If you're paying attention, I totally fucked up numbering my episodes over the past like 4 episodes or so. So I had to go back and make some updated changes. But I am sure that this is episode 68, as long as you don't count like 13.2 that I did back in the day, which was really stupid. I'm never doing that again. So anyway, back to episode 68. Welcome. I am still continuing to have a conversation about the 2015 LGBTQ exclusion policy reversal that just happened. I invited Blair Osler, who was one of my very favorite voices to listen to in terms of listening to the queer response amongst our Mormon and post-Mormon and progressive Mormon and whatever you want to call yourself in the Mormon spectrum. She has wonderful things to say. So here she is sharing all her feels. I hope you enjoy what she has to say as much as I do. And that's pretty much all I have to say, with maybe an additional plug for please come over and support me on Patreon if you would like to see Mormon Happy Hour continue to bring wonderful, I hope they're wonderful, episodes to people that want to hear them. I know that you're out there. I love hearing from you. That almost is the most important thing. To know that you're listening and to hear from you is really great. You can contact me through DMs on Instagram. You can contact me through Facebook or mormonhappyhour@gmail.com. I may be slow to answer that, but I check it a couple times a week. There's also a voicemail, 435-494-1427. And I love hearing from you. So if you can't donate money each month, then that's fine. I still absolutely love your support. There's still iTunes that you can give us a 5-star rating and review. Make sure it's swear-free. Otherwise, it won't publish. And share this with your friends. That's really, word of mouth is great. And I'm totally fine with growing slow. I'm in a place right now where I no longer have a day job, just suddenly, which is scary. But I'm hoping that the plus side of that is that I'll be able to put a little bit more effort into Mormon Happy Hour. So that'll be exciting. And of course, gardening, because that's my true love in life. And it's springtime, so that's probably where you'll find me most of the time. So anyway, all for my plugs. I love your support. Thanks for all your support. And please enjoy Blair Osler. Welcome to Mormon Happy Hour. Today I have Blair Osler back, and I invited her because I just can't get enough of her queer perspective. She's my absolute favorite person to talk to when really big queer issues come down the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints pipeline, not the Mormon pipeline, you know, whatever. So I brought her on because she has shared her perspectives on the recent policy change. And if you want a little bit more information about that, I did talk about it in the last episode, which I'll put in the show notes. But we can definitely, Blair, I'll let you kind of give the recap from your perspective so you can kind of maybe hit some points that I missed. So, Blair, do you want to welcome, introduce yourself just a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. I'm Blair, Blair Osler. I write about all sorts of queer stuff. I'm a philosopher. I am on the board of Sunstone. I'm on the board of the Mormon Transhumanist Association. And I'm also on the board of the Christian Transhumanist Association. So I write things and I do things on boards. And I'm just super thrilled to be here. I love your podcast. I think it's great. Anyone who's willing to let me just like speak my piece uninhibited, like I'm like, you're already my friend.
So I wanted to allow you a chance to kind of recap why we're here, which is the exclusion policy reversal. So you can start back as far as you want and explain the first one and then the reversal or whatever you want to do, whatever you're feeling.
Sure. Yeah. So in November 2015, a controversial policy was released, and then it was actually confirmed that it was a legit policy, changed the handbook, which basically marked homosexual couples as apostates, mm-hmm. and it barred their children from participation in rituals and saving ordinances. So, for example, babies couldn't be blessed, children of 8 couldn't be baptized if you were a child of a practicing homosexual couple. They then rescinded some ideas and was like, oh, only if you're living with that person, because we want to make this more family friendly. So there was a whole uproar about it, but long story short, it was not good. And the Mormon internet blew up from just disbelief to mourning to mental gymnastics of trying to figure out how to make this okay. So everybody was processing this policy that, like, honestly was contrary to Mormon doctrine, this idea of like punishing kids for the sins of their parents. And I'm using that with air quotes, right? You know, because no one's sinning here. So that happened about that's 3.5 years ago now. Mm-hmm. So most recently, the church has now reversed the policy. And it was kind of like a gotcha, just kidding. That's right. What it felt like anyway. Right. That is very much what it felt like.
Wow. So tell me, what was it like for you when you heard about the policy reversal?
Yeah, honestly. So the first reaction was caution and shock. It was very apprehensive because when you're a queer Mormon, you're constantly having to prepare yourself for the next thing, for like the next lashing, the next whatever it is, the next ignorant comment. And so when you hear something good, it always comes with like, you know, with your guard up at the same time too. Like, is this legit? Are they real? What's going on? And so I heard about it via people PMing me. I was sitting in class and all of a sudden my phone starts blowing up and I had a couple friends text me links to the press release and I started scrolling through my PMs and I was like, oh my gosh, I have a ton of PMs. So I'm like trying to focus in class, but I'm not focused at all. I'm totally like flipping through my phone and I was reading through it and I was just like, processing, right? Like I just wanted to process to see fully what's going on and what's happening. And so I click on Facebook and check all my outlets and I see a bunch of people celebrating and I'm looking at the people who are celebrating and it's predominantly straight people. Yeah. And so I'm going through and I'm looking at who's celebrating these changes and who's saying all these things and how much relief they feel and how happy this makes them. And I'm just thinking, okay, that's a fair and legitimate response. You know, we're all entitled to our own response. But I thought it was very strange that it was coming from straight folks, straight mm-hmm. cisgender folks.
Interesting.
And so I just let it sit. I just let it lie. I even had more friends PM me, hey, what are your thoughts and reactions? Things like that. And I honestly just PM back, I'm still processing. I'm not going to say anything. Yeah, exactly. I'm not going to say anything until I figure this out for myself and how I'm feeling. I don't want to go shoot my mouth off and not even get the facts straight.
Yeah.
So upon doing that, I have a feeling that there were a lot of queer folks feeling that way. Just kind of like, I need to process this. I'm not ready to celebrate right now. Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting. The reaction very much proves the point of people who are saying that this reversal policy was not for LGBTQ people. This reversal policy was for allies to retain church membership. Wow. And my social outlet feeds, they confirm that because allies, people who are struggling with this and everything, felt so relieved after this was gone. They felt so much better. And again, that's good. I'm glad. That's fine. but it does demonstrate that this wasn't for us. This was meant for someone else. And so, you know, maybe your more orthodox Latter-day Saint is going to be like, well, what do you want? They reversed the policy, right? What do you want? You know? And I get that response, and that's fine that you're entitled to your response too, but it's very insensitive and unaware of the general tone of what's going on in the queer community. Mm-hmm. So when I found out, I was very much just slow to even respond.
Me too. Yeah. It was hard. Like, people would ask me how I felt, and I'm just like, I'm still mad. And then I could hear like this TBM voice like, oh, well, you're going to be mad no matter what they do. And I'm like, well, yeah. Cause when they release headlines like this, like the headline sounds great. I'm like, great, they reversed it. And I'm like, but let me read the fine print. Cause there's always bullshit in the fine print. That's like, really? And there is, even in this policy, there's like, well, it's still considered a morality and a law of chastity issue. It's still a sin, you know, like they still condemn it while they're like, oh, well, we're going to loosen up. And like, and I can't wrap my brain around, like, obviously I'm not a believer in LDS authority anymore, but I'm like, how many years did it take God to change his mind, air quotes, about like the blacks and the priesthood ban? Like, that was over 100 years, and 3.5 years, and he changed his mind. Did he really change his mind, or did you just hear him wrong? Or, oh yeah, it's all made up and this is just you parading as God on the earth? Like, it's just, right. Oh, it's so aggravating. I was mad when I heard it.
Yeah, no, definitely. Well, and the other thing is, I think what you're pointing out here, and I hope more people come to understand that revelation isn't what people think revelation is. Mm-mm. Revelation is getting new information and then changing. That's what revelation is, right? Like, revelation isn't like the bat phone to God in the holiest of holy rooms in the temple. That's not how revelation works. You know, revelation is literally just this idea of you're getting in new information. Well, this is what I see revelation as. This is what I should say for myself, is that we're literally getting in all of these different bits of information. We get it from church hierarchy. We get it outside the church. We get it inside the church. But it's very much a communal experience. So when Nelson throws down the revelation card like that on this idea of it's a revelation, this could be both good and bad. Bad if people take him seriously as far as like, oh, God told him to do this. It could be good as if he does it enough, he undermines his own power and authority. Totally. If you keep throwing down the revelation card, you see it even like conversations on Reddit and social media and everything of like totally TBM members being like, but I don't get it. If that was revelation and this was revelation, what's going on? And to me, that makes me very happy inside because cognitive dissonance is happening, and they're saying, whoa, maybe revelation isn't the bat phone to God. Maybe revelation is just, we got a bunch of new information. We're losing members because of it. Millennials are upset about LGBTQ issues. Maybe we should change our minds about this. You know, so for me, that counts as revelation. I think that we should change what we think about revelation more so than being like, I don't know. I mean, Nelson can throw down the revelation card all day long, but if he does it enough, people are going to start waking up and being like, but you just said girls wearing pants on their mission was revelation. It's like, yeah, that's revelation. People, girls can wear pants now. You know, revelation isn't like this, you know, pillar of light, whatever.
A caveat, they can wear pants on their mission, except if they're waiting in at the bus stop in a malaria-infested mosquito place on their way to church, because they can't wear pants to church. So I'm sure that there is a bubble of protection around them only on Sundays when they're waiting at the bus stop, because they have to wear dresses and they can't wear pants on those days, right? Right?
Right. Well, it just makes good sense, Colleen, frankly. Duh. I'm just kidding.
So stupid. tell me about your thoughts on the policy itself, like, or how it was delivered.
There's definitely room for improvement on the delivery. there was no apology. And I know our church has a long history of, you know, oaks, we don't give apologies. Mm-hmm. But I do think apologies are in order. And these are just basic tenets and principles of being a decent human being, right? Like, I was taught in Young Women's, like, four R's of repentance that were like recognition, remorse, remission. I can't even remember what the fourth, maybe the fourth one was.
Restitution.
Thank you. See, you know it too. And part of that is an apology, right? When you show remorse, you say, hey, I'm really sorry. That was a bad idea and I apologize. Now, again, of course, even if they gave the apology, I am going to own my biases right up front. I would still not be okay with it, even with the apology. So really? I kind of don't care if they gave the apology or not. No, you can't, like, for me, I'm just kind of like, you can't fix all the wrongs that were already done. Like, the idea of restitution doesn't restitute even with your apology. You blew it. Like, the apology would have been nice, and I think they should have, but I would have still been upset. So for some TBM members, they're just kind of like, well, you're going to be upset no matter what. And I'm like, well, a little bit, yeah. And let me tell you why.
Exactly.
Because serious consequences the last 3 years. And so if you want to do a serious apology, I want you to list every member that was excommunicated, my friends that were excommunicated. I want to list every person who died by suicide, not just because this policy made it happen, but it was a contributing factor, okay? There is a contributing factor. I want you to go apologize to all the children who didn't get baby blessed. I want you to apologize my children because it affected their baptism. It affected so many things. Like, I want you to list through and really recognize and acknowledge the harm that caused to the community. And I'm sorry, it doesn't get acknowledged by just being like, well, there's been perceived pain among allies of the LGBTQ community. Like, they didn't even acknowledge the pain of, like, us. Yeah. It was about the ally. It was about retaining them and making them feel good. It still wasn't even about us. So I don't know. I'm kind of indifferent on the apology. Again, it would be nice, and I understand why people would feel good about it, but...
So the problem I see with apologies is that they can't mm-hmm. apologize because it's revelation from God. They can't apologize on behalf of God, right? How does that even work? Right?
So, because, well, again, if you recognize this revelation as something different than that, you could, but that would be, again, disillusionment to the very idea you're talking about, that I am God's mouthpiece on earth, the ordained patriarch for the church to be able to say these things. And so the apology takes away from the exact illusion you're talking about, right? This yeah. idea that he does have the backbone to God. And frankly, so I guess for someone like me, that's why I don't think it matters one way or the other, because they're not apologizing on behalf of God. God didn't do this. This wasn't God's revelation. Like, are you kidding me? God doesn't do that to people. I can't believe in any of that kind of nonsense, which is funny because I'm still a theist and people call that nonsense, but I got my reasons. But long story short, you can apologize without kind of breaking down the illusion of, you know, God's mouthpiece on earth. So you're mm-hmm. kind of right.
So what about, like, do you have any other thoughts about baptism, same-sex issue? Like, do you want to go into the verbiage at all?
Oh, for sure. Well, so yeah, there's definitely been some good things and bad things about the policy reversal. I'm calling it the policy reversal. I don't know what else to call it yet. I know whoever called it the policy of exclusion, like, thumbs up on you. That's perfect way. I'm calling this the policy reversal. Mm-hmm. So the policy reversal is both good and bad. It's bad in that, one, you didn't get the apology, which would have been nice. Mm-hmm. Two, you already mentioned it, like, you're still doubling down on homosexuality being a sin. And it's just kind of like, this is not a sin. It was never a sin in the first place. And you need to just drop that doubling down on homosexuality being a sin. Mm-hmm. I also was really frustrated that, like, people didn't acknowledge how much this didn't address issues related to gender. So this doesn't address issues of like, and even just women, like regular cis women, like not being able to baptize their kids or bless their babies and things like that. We want to talk about being more inclusive and have more inclusive policies. And then we say, hey, guess what? Kids from LGBT parents can, you know, participate in these rituals too. But we still have forgotten, like, their mothers can't, not at least in a full, robust way. Trans men can't. They're not ordained to the priesthood. And so we still have all these other complex issues that weren't even addressed in the policy reversal. We still talk about the idea of, like, you know, same-sex issues. There was no stigma taken away from anything like that, no softening in that department. I mean, it was still very much like, those who suffer from same-sex attraction. I'm like, I don't suffer from it, baby. I'm bi for the ladies. My suffering comes from having to talk to you about it. So I like the idea. So they had this phrase too in the policy reversal that says, we want to reduce the hate and contention, which is really, really, really misleading. It's because it is because they're saying, look, after this policy came out, there was just so much hate and contention that we want to come in and help your hate and contention without taking responsibility and accountability for the fact you implemented the policy that harvested the environment for the hate and contention. It's like going in and punishing my kid for eating ice cream when I put it on the countertop. Like, it's my own dang fault in a lot of ways, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's just kind of like, I feel like sometimes the brethren don't want to take responsibility for the fact that a lot of what they're doing harvests the environment of the reactions. So you can't be like, same-sex marriage is a sin and have all these things and you should be celibate and XYZ. Mm-hmm. And then when the membership takes those ideas and runs with it, you can't chastise them for what they just did because you harvested the environment for their homophobia. You know what I'm saying? And so I really would have liked a little more accountability and responsibility from the brethren, frankly, to just stand up and take responsibility for their own words and actions and how that affects other people.
Well, they're redirecting the blame. They're like, when I say code speak, they're using the words hate and contention, air quotes, because we know that those words mean the devil. And so these feelings of hate and contention that the membership is feeling, it's because the devil is influencing them. And so we're going to help you. And there's no self-reflection, like you said. There's no going back on them and their policy. The hate and contention is coming from you, membership, because you're listening to the devil right now. And that's what they're speaking to. That's what I hear. That's the code speak.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, that's a perfect way of putting it. I couldn't agree more.
So let's see. Is there any good? Do you see any good in the policy reversal?
Well, okay. So yes, I think so. There's good in potential, and even potential good is still good. So at the end of the day, at least in my broad master plan, gay agenda of everything that I'd like happen in the church, in my master plan, it does start with a policy reversal, right? You have to get rid of this garbage. You have to clear the garbage from the foundation before we can even start building something beautiful again. So congratulations, you're taking out the trash. So that's good. That's helpful. Even if it wasn't done in the perfect way, it's still good that it was actually done, especially for people who still want to engage with the church, right? For people who have already left, sure, that, you know, whatever, that's cool. And I'm in no way saying anyone needs to, like, see, they reversed the policy, come back to church now. No, I'm not saying that at all. Not even remotely. I think another good thing about this, hopefully, that I hope more members see, is that this is also a product of social influence. again, this idea of disillusionment to what revelation is. Mm-hmm. Like, this policy just get reversed because, you know, God called down Nelson. We need to reverse the policy. No, it didn't work that way. Nelson probably looked at a lot of stats from a lot of different advisors and had a lot of projections and forecasters of what it would mean if we did this. And so one good thing about this, hopefully, if people are critical thinkers, they'll go, well, maybe revelation changes when the people change. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so hopefully from this, we'll see more of that. And even if Nelson throws down the revelation card, I'm kind of okay with that because it's creating more and more cognitive dissonance for TBM believing members, right? So I think that could be really good.
But wait, like along this thought, like, I don't know, I guess I have some pushback. I don't know if I really, like, I agree that this is why the change happened, but I don't know if this is a TBM thought or something that even is going to cross their mind, because they fundamentally don't believe that revelation comes from social influences and activism. Like, it's not a bottom up, it's a top down organization, period. And like, what about other activists? Like, what about ordained women? That's been around for a long time and it's huge. What about Protect LDS Children and worthiness interviews and everything Sam Young is doing? What about that? Like, why do they choose, like, not to say that LGBTQ isn't like a priority, but why do they choose this issue and not other issues? And why, like, I just want to know why, like, what is their bottom line?
Yeah. So you're asking me to dive into the mind of the TBM member here. So
it's just a rhetorical question. You don't have to answer.
Why are they doing this, Blair? I'm like, I don't know. I think it's silly. No, but I do think that, again, I agree a lot of them think that way, but I think this is a little bit different because, like, say with ordained women, the Brethren never came out with a policy with ordained women to say, sorry, women, you can never be ordained and it is always a sin for a woman to be ordained, to where they have said these things about homosexuality. And so the flip-flop is just a little more obvious. But I totally agree with you. And this is also a very much a church institutional tactic, is this idea that when they come and change things, they want to present it as, we did this regardless of external influences and nothing influenced this decision other than the church changes when revelation, da, 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 da. Mm-hmm. So there, I guarantee you, so like, mark my words, put it on the podcast now. Someday when women are ordained, because I think they will be.
Wow.
Someday when women are ordained, it will be a day of rejoicing and grieving. And you know who will be grieving? Ordained women. The women who actually had to fight for it. And the women who were, you know, ridiculed for it, excommunicated, disciplined for it. And they will try to make it out to be as if the church did this amazing, glorious thing without recognizing all these people that made this happen. This revelation didn't pop out of the ground from nowhere. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's our responsibility as activists, as post-Mormons, ex-Mormons, anyone, is to be like, no, you don't get to erase our history. You don't get to erase our experience and our contributions. So I definitely think that, sorry, going back to your main point about ideas of like the policy change, that we also need to do that. We also need to be like, look, this was a product of activism. If people were totally content and okay with this, I don't think the policy would have changed or the policy reversal would have happened. Totally. So there's that. I don't know. I mean, yes, it's good, but but sometimes even good things are still painful because it just reminded you, the good thing was you just decided not to hit me today. Thanks. That's good, right? But it's not great.
And you didn't apologize and you didn't make sure I was okay from the last time you hit me. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. You didn't even be like, hey, LGBTQ people, how are you feeling? No, it was literally written for allies. It was not written for us.
I like how you pointed that out in the actual verbiage. It says like the whatever hate and contention in the allies, and I don't remember what it said exactly, but I was like, oh my gosh, you're so right. Even in the verbiage, like, hey, this is, we're not directing this to any actual LGBTQ members, because there are no homosexuals in the church. We're directing this to the church membership, because they're struggling with the policy, and they literally changed it. You're so right, for the straight cis members that are like, oh, this really looks like it sucks for this group of marginalized people. Like, oh, I'm going to be sensitive and be sad for them, you know, like, that's all it's doing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And again, that's why you could see all the reactions of, you know, allies like praising this and being so happy, because that's exactly what it did. It appeased their sensibilities, which is good. They should be empathetic to us, right? We need, like, and this is not a knock to allies. I don't want, like, anyone who's not queer to listen to this and be like, see, you guys suck. I don't think that at all, because honestly, it's because of them that this is getting reversed in a lot of ways. And it's because of queer folks and the allies in the partnership doing this together that it actually happened. If this were only queer folks and nobody cared about us and people weren't walking away from the church, or millennial like retention, like in Jana Reese's books, The Next Mormon, and how she talks about it, I think it was like one of the top three reasons millennials are like is uninterested in the church is because of LGBTQ issues. Mm-hmm. And so like the brethren aren't blind to these things. They're a board of directors. They operate as a company, right? You're going to have to know your market. Mm-hmm. And so I just, I'm thankful for the allies. Yes. And that's okay. If you want space to celebrate, I'm okay with that too. But you also need to provide space for mourning too, and recognize that this was a little more your day than it was our day.
Yeah. And it does go back to, I'm glad that you recognize the power of allies in this revelation, air quotes, revelation, this change, because you're right that the church won't listen to any members of the LGBTQ community. They're deaf to them, literally deaf. You know, they choose to not hear them if it comes out of the mouth of an LGBTQ person. And we know that because, like, in that leaked video that, like, they were talking about, you know, internet security and Julian Assange, and, you know, like, well, but is he a confirmed homosexual? Like, that's all that matters to them. That's all that matters to them, is like, well, who are they wanting to have sex with? We need to know that before we listen to them. And if they are choosing to have sex with anyone that we don't approve of, then we can't hear their voice. And so,
well,
go ahead.
No, you're 100% correct in that, like, we operate as a church, as a hierarchy. And so if their bro pal in the 70 or Q15 says something, they're going to listen to them. If they hear it from a 70, great. A state president, great. A former bishop, okay. You know, there is a strict hierarchy of voices they are willing to listen to. And by design, LGBTQ people are on the lower end of that pecking order. Why? Because we can't hold valuable callings. Women, we can't be ordained to the priesthood. Trans folks, forget it. There's not even room for you. You get no voice in this church. Intersex people, we're just going to completely ignore that you even exist. So when you look at the hierarchy of the church, it is specifically designed so that you listen to the people who are in positions next to you, and those positions happen to be straight, white, cisgender, heterosexual men. Not always white, as we're seeing, but, you know, very, very, very few exceptions, but generally speaking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. So tell me about Laura Root.
Oh, yeah. What did Laura Root say? I can't remember. I was listening to her podcast on, it was Ask a Lesbian Mormon. And she brought up a really interesting point about Nelson. He was in a position in which he could have sloughed off this issue to the next prophet, and it would have been totally off his plate. You know, hypothetically, he dies within the next 5 or however many years, and he could have made the policy of exclusion someone else's problem, and he could have left it as it is. But he didn't. he handled it. Now, a cynic would say he had to handle it because people are leaving a church. And the altruist would say, oh, well, he handled it at the expense of his own thing because, or at the expense of his own, you know,
presidency,
whatever.
Authority.
Yeah, presidency, because it does look really bad on him. Like you pointed out, this idea that, oh, wow, God changed his mind in 3 years. That's weird. So in a way, this makes him look kind of bad. And even to some TBN members, like the Fringer TBN members, this does kind of make Nelson look bad because it's kind of like, you just told me this and now you said this in a really short period of time. So he's going to have to deal with the consequences of that. So shout out to Laura Root for pointing that out to me because I didn't even acknowledge that. But so in a weird way, it is mildly praiseworthy that Nelson did decide to do this when he did decide to do this because he could have put it off and made it someone else's problem, but now it's his problem.
Yeah.
So
that is a really interesting perspective, like looking at the idea that he didn't have to do this. This reversal didn't have to happen. And we, quite frankly, none of us expected it. And so do we praise him for even doing it? I guess so.
What? Hey, I wouldn't go that far. No. No, I guess I think there's aspects of it that are praiseworthy and aspects that are not praiseworthy. Absolutely. And that's one praiseworthy aspect. And that's one thing I'm always talking about online too, in my interactions with other people, is that we have to get away from this binary black and white thinking of even like the church evil. Like the church isn't entirely evil. Like, you know, there's complexity and nuances. And even for the prophet, president of the church, like there's complexities and nuances. Like some of it is praiseworthy and some of it isn't. And we have to sit and sift through all those and see things through a more nuanced lens. And that requires, you know, a little bit of humility.
Yeah. It's like, I keep going back to that abuser analogy. Like, you know, it's Nelson saying, oh, you know, we're going to take back what we said. And he's like giving you a hug, but at the same time he's like pinching the back of your arm so no one else can see, like really, really hard. So it's like it appears that he's loving you, but then he's hurting you at the same time. Like that's how I feel about it, kind of.
Oh yeah. Well, and this is just totally reflective of everything we experience, like even conference weekend, right? This idea that one prophet is saying there's hope in the afterlife to be with your eternal family. And then the next person is saying, we're running out of time. No one, you know, we don't all get to be together forever. And so like the membership really does, even on a broader level, besides the LGBTQ community, is experiencing whiplash. And that's like typical abuse of like, typical a behavior of an abusive person, right? This idea like, I'm going to come hit you and then I'm going to apologize and feel bad so long as I can see bruises. But as soon as the bruises heal, I'm going to hit you again. And maybe I'll even hit you again before the bruises heal. And so, I mean, you even see that within the same conference session, let alone within a 3-year span of the LGBTQ community, right? Mm-hmm. So it is frustrating. I think the whiplash effect, the, you know, doublespeak, all of it, it's very disorienting. Mm-hmm.
So what kind of feedback have you been getting? Because you've been really public and I love your voice on social media. It's the best. Thank you so much for taking the time to write out your thoughts. Like that to me, like, I love that you do that because I find it too hard to do that. Like to sit down and process my thoughts, to throw it out there, to make the post public and then like receive the bullshit that can come along with the praise and, you know, the what do you call it? The thanks and the camaraderie. Like it's tough to be vulnerable and put your thoughts out there. So thank you. And like, what kind of feedback have you been getting?
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for your compliment. I'm flattered you read my stuff. So I came out with my, because a lot of queer folks were putting out their, after the dust settled from like ally celebrating, then suddenly, you know, queer folks started talking and said, hey, we're having a little bit of a different experience here. Mm-hmm. And so I put my experience out there. It got shared a bunch of times and a bunch of people, you know, got their hands on it and everything. And what I found really interesting is that there is definitely two things happening. Like there's trans erasure, people not recognizing that the trans experience is not addressed by this at all, at all. And two, there's a whole lot of bi erasure going on in this.
As
because
always.
What happens, exactly, right? That somehow, because you're a bi person in a heterosexual marriage, you're not even affected by this policy. And it's like, okay, well, let's just step back for a minute. So I had a few people basically say that to me because I get that a lot because I'm bi and they assume, you know, well, you're in a heterosexual monogamous marriage. And I'm like, okay, well, you can assume things about my life. That's fine. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Let's even go along with those assumptions. Let's pretend your assumption is right. And I'm in a heterosexual monogamous marriage as a bisexual woman. So how does this really affect me? Mm-hmm. So here's the thing with that. One, it is so self-centered and egoist to think that because it's not my child being barred from baptism, that somehow I shouldn't care about my best friend's child being barred from baptism. Mm-hmm. So whether or not anybody recognizes this, I feel like it's very obvious. This is very much a bi issue because we stand in the hetero community and we stand in the gay community. So mm-hmm. regardless of who we are married to at the time, they wrote that policy and it hurt me too. My husband could just as easily be my wife. Now, he's not, and I get that. And so because of that, I have the privilege of getting my children baptized by their father because, of course, I can't be ordained. But because of that, that doesn't mean that it didn't affect my family. It didn't affect my relationships and the people I talked to be able to look at the lesbian couple next to me who can't baptize their children and know, say, see, Blair, because you have bi privilege, you can go and baptize your kids. Now, my lesbian friends don't say that to me because they know better. It's usually straight people coming in and saying, see, you have privilege over them, and that's why it's okay, and you don't need to feel hurt by this at all. And I'm just thinking, let's take this even to the next level. Let's pretend we're all straight people are bisexual now. And I would venture to guess that people might feel a little bit differently about the policy if they knew that it was their spouse's gender that made their child's baptism legitimate or not. It is the weirdest thing to be able to just be like, well, the gender of your partner is going to determine whether your children get baptized or not. It just doesn't even, I don't even know. My brain wants to explode from this. So when people come at me and be like, but you're bi, how does this really affect you? And I'm like, well, my second son didn't get baptized. And this had a lot to do with it. My first son was baptized, but my second son wasn't. And I felt completely torn between my communities. Mm-hmm. If we really took our theology seriously, and by our theology, people who still subscribe to Mormonism, this idea of the body of Christ, and when one member suffers, we all suffer. When one member rejoices, we all rejoice. And the question for me from the TBM person saying to the bisexual, how does this really affect you? I just heard you don't believe in the body of Christ. You don't believe your own theology. Because if you really did, you would recognize that even if I'm bi or not, or whether it's the lesbian or you, when one member suffers, we all suffer with it. That child isn't just their child. It's our community's child. We take care of each other. So that question just makes me feel like, are you even Mormon?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, I got in my soapbox there.
I love that you speak to the bi experience because like that's something that I'm learning and it's part of my, I guess, faith. Not even faith. It's just part of my experience, like leaving Mormonism and learning more about and like being true to my own authenticity because it was, I mean, let's be honest. I've liked girls since I was in like junior high. As soon as I got to like PE, I'm like, oh, boobs. Like, and I was like, what a weird, like, and I didn't know how to rationalize it. Cause I'm like, oh, that's weird. That's not okay. Like I can't, you know, like, let's just, you know, turn it off like a light switch, you know, like I just can't acknowledge it. And that's how I lived my entire life. And it wasn't, and then I just kind of like joked about it. Even when I was a Mormon, like this is how I dealt with it is I always just joked about like, oh, I have an inner lesbian. And it was just like a joke. And I treated my own sexuality as a joke. And then it wasn't until, you know, I really got outside of Mormon Orthodoxy in the past, like 3 years or so that I'm like, oh, that's real. That's real. Mm-hmm. My feelings are real and valid. My attraction is real and valid. Yet, and so it's been weird to kind of like learn my place in the LGBTQ community, because I feel like because of bi erasure and because of what's, you know, how you present, I don't look like I belong in the community. And so it's really hard for me to kind of like, you know, share that experience and how, you know, just like you were saying with like, well, Blair, how could this policy possibly affect you? Because you're married to a man, like, you know, and you're like, wait, hold up. Like, first of all, and like, this is what I'm always like, my complaint is I'm like, first of all, no one has a right to ask me who I'm having sex with, period. You just don't have that
right. Thank you. Thank you.
Like, stop assuming that that's your right to know. If I tell you who I'm attracted to, that's my boundary. That's my limit. That's where your information, like, that I'm going to give you stops. You don't get to ask me who I'm having sex with. Even if you're part of the LGBTQ community, you don't get to ask me. You know? And so like, that's, I love that you speak to the bi erasure. I love that. So thank you.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and I think it's such a common experience too, that it almost pains me to see that this is happening and getting embraced. And there is an intersectional component of gender too, to where, and I won't speak to the bi male experience. There's other bisexual men you should talk to about the bisexual male experience. I'm not going to explain their experience. It's not my place to tell their story. But I can tell you, for bisexual women, there's this idea of like, as women, we're already kind of seen as not trustworthy, changing our minds and fickle and all these things. And then you throw on bisexuality, bisexuals are seen as changing their minds, noncommittal and fickle and all these things. So for a woman in a heterosexual marriage to come out, and I actually talked to a woman this weekend who, her husband, who she was afraid to come out as bi because she didn't think anyone would believe her because she looks relatively non-queer, you know, for whatever is in the human imagination of what queer is supposed to look like. And she was happy in her marriage, but there was this thing, like you said, this little inner lesbian inside that was just like, you know, no one knows this about me, but I feel like someone should know this about me. And I think that's part of the, one of the things about being a bisexual and a heterosexual relationship is this idea of like, you're going around in a sense of almost kind of like imposter syndrome, as if like people are going to all of a sudden find out who I really am and that I am bi. And so you're like constantly having to like reconcile this idea of like, well, I'm a homosexual, but even if you've never slept with a woman or never anything, that doesn't make you more or less homosexual, right? But yet for some reason for bi people, if you're not having sex with all the genders, you're suddenly not delegitimized as bi. I mean, we don't go up to heterosexual missionary boys and be like, have you proved your heterosexuality? No, we don't do that. Like, we just assume they say they're attracted to girls and we say, yeah, you're attracted to girls. You're heterosexual. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, but for a grown woman in a marriage, in a relationship, who's just like, look, I'm coming out as bi because like, for me, it was almost this existential feeling that was like, what if I die tomorrow and nobody knows who I am and nobody knew this about me and they all thought of me in this way, but that was never, ever really me. And I think that it's a very common experience. So welcome to the club.
Thank you. what else? So we're talking about, your feedback. So
yeah, I think we got the feedback down. Yeah. I think we can talk about general conference. Should we talk about general conference?
Yes, please. So if anyone is unaware or doesn't follow Blair Osler on Facebook, you should, because how many years have you been doing Hug a Queer Mormon?
I started doing it the year after Peter Mosman started doing it. I think it's Mosman or Mooseman. I always pronounce his name wrong. I'm sorry, Peter. Anyway, he started doing it about 2.5 years ago, and I joined him shortly after. So it's a couple years now.
Okay. Fantastic. And I luckily somehow have been following you ever since then. And it's a beautiful thing. And it's a amazingly brave thing that you do. And I feel like it's such a public service. So can you talk a little bit about what you and Peter are doing and kind of that experience?
Yeah. So around general conference time, we go out and we offer hugs to anybody who would like to hug a queer person. We bring our signs, and mine this year said hug a queer Latter-day Saint. It used to say hug a bisexual Mormon. I actually changed it to queer because I got so much feedback on Facebook and other places about the word queer being bad. I'm like, ooh, well, if it's bad, I just need to put it on a poster. Let's go put it on a poster.
I love that response. And I've been following the pushback you've been getting on the weird, on the word queer. And I fell in love with that word because of you. And so I love that you have like, you've gone out and reclaimed it. And I love how you use it. So talk about that a little bit too.
Yeah, definitely. So I love the word queer because it encompasses a broad range of LGBTQ experiences without having to totally expose yourself. And by expose yourself, I feel like sometimes my labels, like bisexual, tells you maybe more about yourself, more about myself than maybe I want to. So queer gives me both legitimacy in the community and that I'm experiencing something non-straight, non-cis. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it gives me privacy. Like, I'm queer. No, you don't get to know and ask things about my genitals or my hormone levels or who I'm sexually attracted to. I will share those things with you when I'm ready to. Mm-hmm. So that's why I really love the word queer. I am most sympathetic to criticisms of using the word queer from the older generations, because to them, I do understand older generations of queer people who were literally called this in a very derogatory way and internalized that and have trauma and even trigger, that word can be very triggering. So yeah. I get that. And if they don't want to use that word, that's totally fine. But at the same time, that doesn't mean I can't use that word in my own spaces, on my own wall, in my own way. So yeah. I am in no way saying everyone has to adopt that word. You just need to not have a problem that I've adopted that word. Mm-hmm. So anyway, the sign says hug a queer Latter-day Saint. And my friend Peter, Catherine showed up, Chris, Audrey, Ella, a few others. Anyway, and we just stand there with our signs, and it's just to give hugs and literally just break physical barriers. For some people, I can tell what this is like the first time they've ever talked to or even like touched another queer person by hugging them. I had one person hug me who it was sad but happy at the same time. And she came up to me and gave me a big hug, and she goes, "Yeah, I'm not afraid to hug anyone." And I'm thinking, oh, that's kind of cute and sad that like you have to like convince yourself that like you're not going to catch the gay, or like, you know, she appeared to have so little exposure to queer folks that this was a big step for her. And that's okay. Like, you got to meet people where we're at. Anyway, while we're there giving hugs and stuff, sometimes reporters and peoples will ask us what we're doing and things like that. And there's always like the few skeptical people, usually like, you know, men who are RMs off their mission, who are just kind of like, "Hey, what's the catch here? What are you guys doing?" It's like, no catch, just giving hugs and building bridges. That's all, you know.
We have a hypodermic needle with gay in it. And when you hug us, we're gonna
totally. Oh gosh, it's funny. So they always want to know, like, not always, but like some people usually want to know, like, "Hey, what's the agenda?" Right. Mm-hmm. And so the reason why it works so well is because there isn't really agenda. We're listening to them and they're listening to us. And there are a lot of people who are struggling and suffering with this, and a lot of them are our allies. So again, when you celebrate the policy reversal, like, I get that. I want to leave space for that experience. Mm-hmm. Because they are suffering with us, and because they hug me and they cry, and it's amazing to have like a straight person cry on your shoulder and experience exactly what I'm saying, like the body of Christ. When one member suffers, we all suffer. Mm-hmm. And for me, there's nothing more spiritually uplifting than like being in the body of Christ with people and having this experience together. And conference is like the perfect place to do that, because people exit the conference center and they may have these ideas about queer folks, what we look like, what we sound like, what we do. You know, we're like constantly like wearing black leather and gyrating on parade floats. Like, I mean, I do that once a year, but like the rest of the year, I'm okay not doing that. I'm just kidding. But so it's really non-threatening. It's totally volunteer basis. And we're just here to talk to you and build bridges. It's that simple. We don't get into like, you know, trying to convince anyone of anything. It's literally just love and peace. Bring it in.
I love that. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
So tell us about, you were telling me a little bit about before we hit record, but through this conference specifically, you did these like little cameo, like spotlight moments that you were constantly posting of interactions that you had, and they were all positive. And I'm sure there were some negative, and someday I want to talk to you about like, well, what are the negatives you get? But let's focus on the positive. Like, so tell us a little bit about your positive experiences that you're posting and what's going to come from that.
So, okay. Yeah. I am an avid journal keeper and I write down so many things I don't share with the internet, but sometimes when something has touched me so beautifully and I want to share that with people on the internet, well, this was definitely one of them, because for me, the Hug a Queer Mormon, Hug a Queer Latter-day Saint, you might even call it a campaign. Our campaign we do with Hugs. It's official now. I called it a campaign. one of the things I love about it is that it's so healing for me. And there's so much pain and suffering and things going on. I just really wanted to be a source of healing because that's what I was experiencing. And it's not to degrade anybody else who is experiencing pain. Like, you deserve that space too. You deserve the space to grieve and all these things. But for me, I wanted healing. And so I started writing down some of these experiences in my phone quickly so I could write them at home in my journal later on, because for my own record keeping, because I do that. And they were just so beautiful. I was like, I'm going to post just like, I was like, I'll just post two or three of my favorites on. And I posted them and people responded. It just, this makes me so happy. This makes me cry. I'm experiencing a strong emotional reaction to this. And so when people are experiencing an emotional reaction, you can tell you're getting somewhere. Like, this is the perfect opportunity to either have space for healing, for understanding, for recognition. And so I added a few more as I could. It was really busy. I couldn't like stop hugging people and then write. And then, you know, logistically there was some issues there, but I was trying to do the best I could to be in the moment and experience it, but share that experience with everybody else so we could get to a place of healing. Mm-hmm. I wrote down even more of them that I didn't have time to post and share and things like that. But like, I'm just so glad that it helped people. I feel like though I should acknowledge and recognize though that it was not my place at all or my intention at all to like try and paint this as a 100% positive experience. I just wanted to share the positive parts.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, there are definitely some less than stellar people you encounter too. Yeah. Strangely, it's usually way more subversive, right? It's the Mormon way, right? It's the more look at you, put my hand around my kid, and we're going to go walk a completely different direction away from you type thing, you know? Like, so it's really, it would be really un-Mormon to come be overtly rude to us. Like, that's not the Mormon way. Mm-hmm. It's passive aggressive. Yeah. So there,
that's a Mormon. Exactly.
There were definitely, I don't want, because some queer people will be like, oh, so it was just all happy and you're going to erase all our pain and things like that. And I'm like, no, I'm not trying to do that at all. There is still legitimate pain. There is still stigma. There are still problems of people who are not open and receptive to even hugging a queer person like myself. It's not to say those things don't exist, but it's to say that there are some really beautiful experiences and really beautiful people trying to work through these issues together. And I think that deserves more airtime. Because we know there's pain. Like, we've been grieving, it's there, and that's okay for it to be there. But I also want to feel the other parts too, that there are members in that conference center who are feeling what I'm feeling, who want me to be there too. And not only that, oh my gosh, Colleen, my favorite is when people come out to me when they give me a hug. It is the best thing ever. And they're always so, depending on where they're at in their journey, like they know we're a safe space because we're queer too. I've had multiple bisexual women hug me and just very discreetly, you know, I'm one of you. Thank you so much for what you're doing. And then they go into the conference center with their group, you know, so they come out, go to the conference center with their group. So there are queer folks in the conference center. Like the ones outside the conference center were probably just a little more loud, but there are quiet ones in there too. And that's one of the things I love most, because it is like, it's a subversive power to be able to be queer and then stay in those pews and keep doing your thing and living your truth in the way you know how. And this one, another bisexual woman, young woman, she's putting in her papers for her mission. And she says she's not really out yet, but she says she can't wait to go on her mission. And she doesn't care because, and she's just like, she's like, I don't care. The church is going to have to deal with it sooner or later. I'm not really out, but I'm still going to go do my thing. And I'm just like, God bless millennials. Oh my gosh. Just go. Yes. Go do your agenda, do your Mormon agenda, your gay agenda, go do it all. Like, it was just like, for me, an elderly millennial, I'm on the older spectrum. Like for these younger millennials, it's just kind of like, I'm gonna go do my thing. And I'm like, oh, please don't lose that attitude. Don't lose that attitude. And so that's a really rewarding experience too. So many beautiful people doing beautiful things, and we need to acknowledge those things too.
Lovely. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, and what you're doing, and I definitely, like, this feels corny to say on the air, but I definitely cried while I was reading your little spotlights. Oh. And they were incredibly moving. So thank you. And I love that you, like, you even take the time to talk about the logistics, because, like, as I'm reading them, I'm like, what is she doing standing there going and typing? Like, I can't do that. So I love that you do it.
No, totally. It is a logistical problem because you have breaks, like the peak time, the peak hugging time, is between probably the morning session and the afternoon session, that whole 2 hour block. You just can't get anything done. So like anything done as in other than hugging and listening to people. So afterwards, you know, conference starts, I'll go, you know, sit on the grass at Temple Square, listen to the conference talks and sit and write down my experiences. Same with after the priesthood session, like I'll come home and write down the experiences of people who hugged me there and things like that. So yeah, it is a weird logistical thing. Like, is she typing as she's hugging them? Right?
Like, you have to remember them all though. Like, that's hard. I love your brain. Well, I love your heart.
Oh, well, and I don't remember them all because like I only shared, gosh, maybe like 8 experiences on the internet, but like I gave over 100 hugs easy, like so many hugs. So I only share a few experiences, but there are so many more. I just shared the ones that most popped out to me. And usually the ones that pop out to me is people who like will hug you and be like, I'm intersex, you know? And I'm like, oh, awesome. Mm-hmm. Or people who will hug you and be like, you know, cry, my son is gay. Like, you know, like these are the ones that like really kind of just like stay with you. But I'm so glad you enjoyed them, Colleen. I'm so glad a lot of people enjoyed them. I know one person was like, this was the highlight of my conference session, and I'm like, or highlight of conference weekend. And I'm just thinking, wouldn't it be great if conference felt like that all the time? Yeah. Wouldn't that be great if we could like, the optimist in me wants to be like, you guys, it could be like this. It could be like this all the time. We just have to be nice. I know, right? I sound like such a mom. Just be nice to each other. Can't we all get along?
So we haven't talked about this, but I keep thinking about it. There was another demonstrator, if you will, at conference, Crystal Legionnaires, who I've had on when she stood up last time in conference, or probably like a year ago, and shouted, "Stop protecting sexual predators" 3 times. Well, she was there at conference. And did you see her by chance?
I wasn't there the Sunday morning. Two of my gal pals was there giving hugs that Sunday morning, and she sent me photos, and I was like, oh, what's going on? I didn't even know what was going on. And so I was texting back and forth before I got my car to drive to go up there. So I wasn't there physically at that same time. I got there like an hour or so later.
Yeah. So she was dressed all in white. It looked like a temple dress. Like just a white plain dress that you would wear in the temple, and she had kind of like red tears on her
face. Yes. Okay. Sorry. I'm totally cutting you off. I thought you were talking about the silent protest demonstration with all the trans and queer flags.
That's important.
There was another. That was Sunday morning. That your what's her name? Your friend?
Crystal. Crystal Legionnaires.
Crystal. I did see Crystal. She was all in white, and she. You're right. Okay. Yes, I was there, and I did see her. Continue. Sorry.
And she had a sign, I believe, I don't have it in front of me, but I believe it said, how many queer kids have to die, which it's a very powerful question, and it's true. And so she was also silently protesting. She just walked Temple Square holding that sign. And I read this beautiful post by someone who saw her. And I'm not even sure if this person who posted it knew who she was, but she saw her walking around, and she had seen her lap a couple of times and noticed that her feet were bleeding. And it was so like moving, because she was walking and her feet were blistering and no one had stopped to help her. And so this woman who made the post was trying to like found some gauze to put in her shoes, but the gauze kept falling out. And so the next time she came around, she had found a police officer and found some Band-Aids to put on her ankles. And so she stopped and like ministered to her, if I can use that word, mm-hmm. and like helped her. And I'm like, what a beautiful moment. Mm-hmm. So that was really moving.
So talk about
the silent protest too.
You're totally fine. There was another silent protest I may not be representing it accurately, so somebody else who has covered it in the news or something, you should probably check your sources. This is just Blair's opinion. But from what I could understand, a bunch of people with flags came and did a silent protest off on the southeast corner of the conference building, and they were just silently protesting the grief of the damage done and the lives lost in the last 3.5 years from the exclusion policy. And I wasn't there for that one. I showed up just slightly later. So that also happened at conference, mm-hmm. which is a little tricky because people were asking us what we were protesting. And so it was just tricky. That kind of goes to show you, like, the LGBTQ community isn't a monolith. We're not all, having the same experience, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So you have your friend pacing around silent protesting. We have the flags silent protesting, and then us giving hugs. And so people asked us, what are you guys protesting today? And we're just like, nothing. And they're like, yeah, they're protesting the flags over there. And we're just kind of like, actually, we just found out about that. We don't even know what they're, we didn't even know. And so it wasn't until later in the news that I saw, and I was like, oh, they're silently protesting and grieving and things like that. Mm-hmm. One concern I do have about that, though, is that I don't think people understood what it was. In that when they saw the flags, I think they felt attacked and intimidated. And the idea of when they did the demonstration right after the policy reversal, I think there was a lot of confusion to be like, why are you protesting the policy reversal? Yeah. Because that's not what the protest was about. The protest was one of a silent mourning and a silent experience for like, okay, we're still grieving. There's still things going on, which is fine. But I hope that the message doesn't get entirely lost, because my husband's coworker was asking about it, and he came home and Drew was asking about it, and he was just like, I don't understand why they were protesting the policy reversal. And so with the timing, I think that there was just some confusion that they were protesting the reversal, but they weren't. They were demonstrating the grieving of the loss that happened in that time period. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that confusion gets worked out and things can be better understood. But it's nice to see so many people caring about the queer community.
Yeah, it is. It is lovely. Yeah. So did you have any closing thoughts?
Gosh, oh my gosh. All the thoughts. Well, I have to say one really interesting, if this is more just like a personal anecdote of like introspection, upon hearing the policy reversal and my own reaction to it, it made me think about my own queer agenda as far as like, someday they'll ordain women, someday they'll allow queer folks in the temple, someday they'll allow all these wonderful things that I'm hoping for. And my reaction to this policy reversal was not what I was expecting. I was expecting to be much happier and that this was supposed to be a joyous thing. Yeah. And on a personal experience or a personal level, I was just kind of like, so if I get my whole agenda and everything I dreamed come true, does that even make it better? Like, if you have to ask your husband for flowers, do you even really want the flowers anymore? You know, it kind of felt like, yeah, it kind of felt like that. Like, if I have to constantly, like, hound you to be a decent human being, is this something I even really want? So in a weird way, I'm just reflective of my own personal journey. So if there's one parting thought for anyone I want them to take away from this, is this the queer community is not having one experience. We're each having multiple experiences. We're dealing with this in our own way. I'm not judging the people who did the silent protest. I'm not judging your friend who did the, you know,
the walk.
I don't know what you call that. The protest walk, exactly, or people giving hugs, or people who are, forget it, I'm all the way out of here, or people who are like, forget it, I'm putting in my papers for my mission. Mm-hmm. That there is no one queer experience right now. We're experiencing a wake of different experiences over, frankly, everyone feeling totally comfortable telling queer people what to do and how to live our lives, you know? So that would be my parting thoughts for everyone. Just recognize no queer, two queer people are the same, and we're not going to react to these things the same. And that's perfectly okay. And I'm here with you in your journey. I'm here with you. We'll work it out. I'm like, I'm going to talk to some people. We'll fix this.
Yeah. I love your positivity and your enthusiasm. Like, you're, I can always count on you. Like, I'll fix it. I want to hear your story. I'm gonna shout it as loud as I can. We'll fix this. Like, I love it.
We're gonna fix it. I'm gonna talk to some people. I'm gonna give a lot of hugs, but we're gonna fix this. It's gonna be okay.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
I'm telling it to myself too.
And I love this. I love this approach that you take. And like this millennial girl who's putting in her papers. I love the fact that this millennial generation, they're rejecting the black and white, and they're fully embracing the, I guess, if you will, the cafeteria Mormon, but I see it as more than that. They're embracing their own authenticity. They get to choose what speaks to them, and they don't have to take it all. They take what works for them, and what works for them may not work for their friend over here, but that's okay. Everybody is entitled to pick and choose what they want. And I feel like even with my generation and older, we're still stuck in the black and white. And I experience a lot in the post-Mormon and ex-Mormon community. There's still that black and white. And like, there's a lot of like vitriol for people that choose to stay. And I'm like, why? Why do you care what other people do with their life? Like, they're being themselves, they're being authentic, and they're loudly championing for what works for them. And they're okay with what you're doing. Why are you not okay with what they're doing? You know?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I love it. Well, thank you, Blair. Awesome. I've taken up your lunch break, and I appreciate you giving it to me. So thank you.
Oh my gosh. No, thank you so much for having me on. It's always a pleasure.
Mwah. Love it. All right. Until next time, Blair.
That wraps up today's topics. We are so glad you stopped by. Be sure to join the Mormon Happy Hour on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Patreon. If you smiled, please drop us a 5-star review wherever you found us. See you next week. Cheers!